My name is Larry Kandarian, and my title is owner and garbage collector.
We just got done touring your land out here, or what your operation out here, and you have a whole bunch of different stuff growing out here. Kind of in general, what's the point of all this? What are you doing out here?
No, the point is to try to educate people what we can grow here, because this is very much a Mediterranean climate and you can almost grow anything. I mean, it's not like Africa where you can plant beans every day of the year, but it certainly lends itself to growing lots of different crops. So we do that. I happen to be well versed in a lot of the crops, California natives and otherwise, and so we are growing more otherwise than California natives right now.
You have a lot. I first asked you how many things you have growing out here, and you told me there was too many to go through. So we took a tour. We stopped at a few of them. One of them was the first wheat we saw over there. What was that?
That was Camu. It's also known as Khorasan wheat, but if you grow it organically, you can call it Camu. If you do not, it has to be called Khorasan wheat because it's trademarked in the United States as Camu organically grown.
And some of the stuff you have out here is not totally obscure. Some people know about it. We saw a large amount of fennel that you have, and a large amount of some other products that you move regularly at farmers markets.
Yes, but what we do, we move fennel pollen. There's only two of us in the United States that do that, because it's quite a challenge to get it off the plant into a bag that somebody can utilize and to tell people how to use it.
We talked about what the point was, is to, some people say this is ancient grains, but we kind of said that maybe this is forgotten grains. These are forgotten things. These are all things that are available and can be grown. And you're kind of, you want to educate these people, anybody, on the fact that this stuff is here and it's easy to grow if you know what you're doing.
Yeah, it's easy to grow, but there are some challenges. Some of these things get really tall and they lodge. They're not like the bred-up wheats that were done during the Green Revolution, where they crossed Chinese short-statured, thick-stemmed wheats with other wheats, and the breeding program went forward after fertilizers and to hold it down and make it shorter and not lodge so you could direct combine it. These are probably not direct combinable. You'd have to windrow them, and the way we do it is put them on tarps in different ways. But so they are challenging. They don't yield 17,000 pounds an acre like some of the other wheats. You can get 1,000 pounds an acre maybe, but there's a lot involved in getting that.
You have a lot of small crops out here that are being used for some research projects, and also you showed me some that were involved in like Beano and stuff like that. And talk about some of those crops and what those do.
Yeah, so the one that's involved in research is Kernza, and it's just a perennial wheatgrass, and there's a movement by the permaculture group to grow perennial wheats rather than till the ground and cause erosion and all the carbon degradation. So if you don't till it, then you have more carbon left in the ground, and carbon sequestration is better. So we've been growing this one for 10 or 12 years, and people in Kansas are just found out about it and are trying it out, and it's almost laughable because they took it to some chefs and they cooked it, and first time they put chocolate chips in it, it didn't taste right. So then they said they ditched the chocolate chips and the pancakes, and they did, and then they made it and it tasted like grass. They said, I can't believe this, it tastes like grass. Well, damn, it is grass. So that's why it tastes like grass. And then the Beano, some of the herbs that we do, because we do herbs, spices, ancient grains, pollens, and the pulses, the beans and peas, and then some botanicals. And so, you know, maybe Beano or Chenopodium album fits in the category of botanicals, but in our case we're using it as an herb, and it's used as a Mexican flavoring for the culinary industry.
The other point, and you said this several times as we were driving around, is you want to keep a seed stock here. You want to keep this stuff available, right? That's the other main reason here.
Yes, yeah. I have been in the seed business for 45 years, and I, you know, we started roguing and keeping seeds pure, and so that's kind of what I do. I like to do that, and so if you buy something from me, by golly, it's going to be what I represented it as being.
We looked at some of your favorite ones out there. You had celery, you had dill, but they're not the normal ones you'd find in the supermarket. These are from overseas or from out of the area, and a lot of stuff that you can't get here in the United States. You're one of the few growers that grows some of this stuff, right?
Yeah, some of the, I like the carrot family immensely, and so that family and the sage family I really dearly love. The carrot family, we grow ajwan and kala, which most people don't know what it is from Indians from India, and then we grow dill and fennel and lots in the carrot family. We have a black carrot that we're growing the seed of, but that whole family is very interesting to me. So we have coriander, we have cilantro, we have parsley, celery. The celery is a leaf type rather than a stalk type celery, so it's totally different.
Now, you guys market some of the stuff you're in, some stores you're in, the Whole Foods over here. You also go to a farmer's market. What are some of the popular things you move at the farmer's markets?
The most popular of the farmers markets are the grains and probably the Ethiopian blue tinge farro, which is the purplish cast one. They call it blue tinge, but it's really purple. It has a lot of anthocyanins, which relates to antioxidants, polyphenols, which means it's heart healthy. Things of color are black barley is really important. It's low glycemic index, so it helps people to digest without getting spikes in their intake, so they're not getting a huge carb spike. And then teff, which is the smallest grain in the world, and then camu, which is the largest. Those four are probably the most interesting, the ones people buy the most.
So if you had to tell someone what they can learn out here, what would you tell them? I mean, would you tell them that, hey, you can grow this stuff, or would you tell them, look what is available if we had this stuff?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, look what is available, and here's how you grow it if you want to grow it. And, you know, I suggest, and I'm working with a lot of people that are doing edible gardens and places where they're just taking some of the areas in L.A. that are blighted apartments and whatnot. A friend of mine is doing project called Tea, and Tea means the edible apartment. And so they take out the lawn, and the landlord lets them do that, and they plant grains, flowers, grasses, herbs, spices, vegetables. And so we've promoted and supplied seeds to some of those, and it just warms my heart to see people in apartments who never talk to themselves, to each other, and now they're outside making food for each other and coming together in community as we should be living.
Let's touch a little bit on your history. At one point in your life, you were in a suit when you went to work. Is that correct?
Yes, yeah, so I was trained as a mechanical engineer. I graduated from Fresno State with a BSME and went on to work for Raytheon Oxnard. Raytheon in Oxnard, and you probably know Raytheon later after I left. I probably couldn't have done this, but somebody else did. They made the smart bombs that were so popular, and their stock went way up. When I was there, they were going broke, and we were working on tiles on the space shuttle, and I just didn't like being a suit. I was a third-story suit, and up in the third story, third floor, and I just didn't like it. And so I grew up on a farm, and I just guess I like dirt under my fingernails.
Now, you're fairly new to these so-called ancient grains. It's been a few years, but you haven't always grown those, right?
No, about 6 years we've been doing the ancient grains.
What makes you keep wanting to do this? You mentioned that, you know, soon you'll be retiring, and you hope soon, and you wanted to find something that you can do. That has to be what keeps you going in doing some of this.
Yeah, I think that I hearken back to what the Native Americans did here, where they ate the entire plant or the whole grain. And so, you know, I want people to eat the whole grain. I don't want them to take off the endosperm, which is called the bran, or take off the germ. you know, and then end up only with the food that the germ would have eaten to grow and break through the bran. I'd rather we utilized all that, because the bran is just fiber. We always need fiber. We don't need refined foods. I'd much rather see us eating a diet of whole grains with a W.
I've asked you several times what the market is like for grains, and you keep giving me the same answer, which is it's a process, right?
Yeah, it really is a process, and it's a process in educating people how to use them, because people are too used to open Quaker's something and put it in 30 seconds later it's ready to eat. And so this is a little bit different process. We're in the slow food movement, not in the fast food movement, but it is really quite fast, where you could actually end up with a risotto type grain on that's very, very heart healthy and very tasty in 20 minutes. But you have to do some prep work the day before. And that's the rub, is to educate people how to do that. Are they willing to do that? Did they forget to do that? The kids want to eat. Hell, we're in trouble. You know, so there's the problem, is education.